Phyllis Diller has retired from show business at the age of 84. This week, she gave what she said would be her final performance in Vegas. Diller was one of the first and only women comic headliners of her generation. Her persona as a crazed housewife, her jokes about her husband Fang, and her many rounds of plastic surgery didn't exactly set the stage for the feminist revolution, but she did pave the way for other women comics. Here's a performance from 1961.
But I know exactly where the trouble spot is. It's middle age. And here's what happens. A woman hits 40. Going 90 miles an hour. And boy, that's a crack up. One morning, she gets up, she looks in the mirror, she punches the panic button. She says, I gotta be younger by lunch! And she'll go through a whole list of idiotic ideas like renting smaller children. But 9 out of 10 will rush off to a plastic surgeon. Or go under the knife, as we say at the clinic. And are you ready for the big fallacy? They all expect to come out looking like Tinkerbell. So what if you do? What are you going to do about the rest of it? Gravity's been pulling on it for 40 years. And I hate that word gravity. It reminds me of a little personal tragedy. 2 weeks ago, my Playtex living bra died. Of starvation. I mean, if just once I could throw up my arms and say, my cup runneth over.
Phyllis Diller got a late start in show business. She was a 37-year-old mother of three when she started to perform. In her close to 50-year career, she performed in the persona of a crazed housewife. We spoke in 1986, and she told me about developing her act.
It was very different because I had no idea what I was doing. Therefore, I was terribly different. There were no female comics around. I was it. I didn't know that. But I had no precedent. I had never seen anything excepting what I had seen on the early days of television in black and white, like Milton Berle, Maury Amsterdam, Art Carney, all men. And there they were. And so I was drawing on my background, my educational background. I did the spoof of a concert. A classical concert. I started with Handel, went through German Lieder, and I did the German, and then I did phony captions, you see. I did a parody of Amahl and the Night Visitors by Giancarlo Minotti, and in my version, her son had lost all his marbles. I did Ima Sumac. At that time, I had a very high voice. And my drum was an oatmeal box, and I had a band on my head with baby shoes and bottle caps. It was madness. I didn't have any idea. I made fun of current high fashion. And finally, little by little by little, I got material. Little by little. I used to read Dear Abby columns and change a few words to make them silly.
How did you start telling stories about Fang, the husband that you use in your routines?
That was an ad lib. I remember in The Purple Onion when I was searching for material, trying out new things every night, and I had a bit about having had an accident in the car, his car, of course, and how I was calling home after the accident to tell old Fang Face. Because the minute you're in trouble, he's the heavy. And I worked on it and realized that I was on to something because this idiot that I portray on stage has to have a husband. And he's got to be even more idiotic than I.
Did people assume that Fang really was your husband, that you had this, like, absolutely crazy husband?
Well, they still do. Every time I'm seen with a man, they say, are you Fang? Everybody wants to meet Fang. Everybody wants to see Fang. Everybody is interested in Fang. They love him. I've built a monster.
How did your husband feel knowing that people would assume that he was Fang?
My first husband adored the idea of being known as Fang. He loved it. He had stationery made up with nothing but Fang on it. And he liked it very, very much. I guess it gave him some sort of importance, which he enjoyed.
Well, let's talk about the character you invented for yourself.
Oh, how about her?
On stage, yeah. Okay, describe the way you will typically come out for a performance.
Like a maniac, dressed silly, with silly hair, the funny little boots, little gloves. All clowns wear gloves, even Mickey Mouse. And I wear gloves, the little teeny short gloves and a little short dress, and that's it. It's a funny persona. And this woman is an idiot, you know. She's a harridan. She comes out. She's telling everybody what's wrong with everything, you know. Please.
So you designed your own image. You designed your own clothes, too. Did you decide what to wear on stage?
Well, you see, I used to dress pretty square, pretty straight. The first few years, I wore actual... One year, I wore Chanel suits. Another year, I wore a Balmain suit. And they were satin and shiny. And I realized I had to wear something shapeless or I couldn't make jokes about my body.
Because your body was too nice?
That's right. I hate to tell you that. So then I invented shapelessness. And to this day, I wear shapeless things so that I can tell them anything I want about my body.
What was your self-image like then? Because you'd get on stage and talk about how ugly you were and how, you know, your husband wouldn't come near you and all these jokes about that. And, in fact, you probably had a terrific figure. You're probably, you know, a good-looking woman, but you'd made yourself into a crazy woman for the performance. So what was your self-image like deep down inside?
I was so busy carving out a career that I didn't have much of a problem with it. I mean, I wasn't a beauty. I was never a beauty. A beauty is sort of a way of life. A beauty is sort of the way you act. Beauties are soft and they talk a certain way. Beauties don't talk like I talk. You know, I'm into the nitty-gritty. I'm into editing. See, my mother, when the phone rang, she picked it up and said, "State your business." So you see, I was not brought up to be a beauty.
In your routines, you do pretty rapid fire.
Well, 12 laughs a minute is as fast as anyone can talk.
How do you build it up? Is there a model that you have about how jokes should build and when the capper should come on?
Oh, yes. The final word must be the joke word, must be the operative word. The final word should end in an explosive consonant, like pop or puck or kook. You understand? There are mellifluous words. Mellifluous is one of them. It flows. It's pretty, you know. It's one of those lovely words, like lavender. You want something strong and pop at the end, like a shot. For years and years and years, people likened my delivery to machine gun fire.
Is there a rule of thumb you use about how many you can tell in a row like that before changing the subject?
Yes.
A sense of rhythm about that?
You find that out by doing them. You have a whole. You want to do as many as you can on one subject because you see it's economy. You have one setup, and then all the tag. You don't have to repeat the setup because every time you do a tag, it has to have a setup. But if you can have one setup and then as many as possible lines, but there is a limit to how many they will take on one character.
Can you give an example of the setup and a few tags?
Well, she's so fat that that's your setup. And then you got all these tags, like sa-da-ba-da-dum, ba-da-da-doom, di-doom-doom-doom-doom. It's music.
You always strike me as being the forerunner of, say, Joan Rivers, you know, that like one of Joan Rivers' models, for a few reasons. First of all, because you're two of the few women who've made it to your stature in the world of comedy, but also because of your self-deprecating kind of humor, which she really has gotten into. Do you see any connection? Do you know her well?
Yes, she's my dear friend, and I don't know any other way for a female comic to get on. They've all, you have to beef about something because comedy is tragedy revisited. That's my definition of comedy. People say, what is comedy? Okay, if you come out and you're lovely and there's no comedy. So self-deprecation and denigration is par for the course. Works.
Do you think it's different for women than for men? Do you think that women more so have to have that kind of humor?
They need a little more help than men do because there's a double standard. Men can talk raunchy without being pilloried. Women are it's the Madonna complex, the Madonna syndrome. They're the mothers, the softies. And when a woman is going to be hard enough and aggressive enough to do comedy, she better have some saving graces. Like, look, I'm humble. I don't think I'm pretty.
Did you have to do that? I mean, do you feel like you had to do that to get in or something?
No. Uh-huh. Remember, I didn't know anything about what I was doing.
Right, okay.
Look, if I hear a laugh, it stays in. It's very simple. Like, if the bucket doesn't leak, don't repair it.
You recently had plastic surgery. Well, several times.
All the time.
All the time? what have you had?
Oh, have you got an hour? I've had everything. I've had three facelifts. The latest thing, I had that eyeliner put on, permanent tattoo. I had a chemical peel. I had a breast reduction. I had a tummy tuck. There's only one procedure I haven't had, and that's liposuction surgery or lipectomy, where they use a vacuum thing that was invented in Paris to suck out unwanted fat from places on your body where exercise doesn't affect.
Why did you have all the plastic surgery?
I was ugly and beginning to look old.
Mm-hmm. Well,
old and wrinkled and hangy.
Uh-huh.
We're talking droop. Droop city.
It's interesting because you'd made your career on being crazy looking, on putting yourself down, on being the frumpy housewife.
True.
So now, I mean, you have... You look rather glamorous.
I hope so. But you see, I'm a single woman and I have a private life. My private life is very important to me. Very important. That's my real life. My life on stage is not real. I am a person. I am real. And I want to look good.
If you had the perfect nose and lips and breasts and everything when you were getting started, do you think you would have gone into comedy?
Well, I did have the perfect breasts, the perfect figure, and my nose was crooked. Let me think. My teeth were crooked. Well, comedy is within. It has nothing to do with your appearance. My appearance helped because it was dysplastic. It helped. And then I made it help more by getting crazier and learning to be theatrical and things like that.
So you have two personas, as you always did, one offstage and one onstage. And how are you dressing on stage now?
Crazy. But chic. I mean, it's a satire of what is chic right now. That's the way I dress.
Are you still talking about Fang?
Oh, honey, he's so big in my act. He's one of my big numbers.
Did you like wife jokes when how do you feel about them now?
I think they're wonderful. I love jokes. I love comedy. I worked with male comics who said, you've heard this is a classic because... More than one comic I've heard say it is where he's married to the woman who's so neat, you know, so neat. She's always, everything has to be perfect. And, you know, men don't like that. The joke that I loved, when he got up to go to the toilet one night, came back, the bed was made. Have you heard that joke?
No.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Can't you see this compulsive woman?
Yeah,
making this man's life miserable.
The problem I've always had with wife jokes is that they always seem to be about the whole genre of women. It's because they were never spouse jokes, because until you came along, there were no women telling jokes. So the joke was always on the woman and never on the man. So instead of being jokes about married life or having this lifelong companion, it was always jokes about women, jokes about dames. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it seemed to put down the whole gender instead of... You know, talking about the tribulations of a long-lasting relationship that men or women would have. Do you know
True.
What I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. But I did some good work, didn't I?
Yes.
I almost have a cause.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, it's been such fun, Terry. I really love your show.
Thanks. Thanks for being here.
Phyllis Diller recorded in 1986. This week, the 84-year-old comic gave what she said would be her final performance. This is Fresh Air.